This is Kabbalah 99. I'm Deborah Sophia. We have on our call today Pir Shabda Khan.
Pir Shabda. Welcome, Deborah. Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Happy to be here with all your listeners.
Welcome. Pir Shabda is the leader of the Sufi Ruhaniyat International and a dear friend that I've known for many years. I especially wanted to have you on the call today because I have been drawing from your book, Physicians of the Heart, for many years, and it is the basis for the discovery I made, what I'm calling the soul manifestation process. And I was wondering if you would talk a little bit about that book and how you happened to write it.
Yeah. So for the Sufis, one of our, you know, what in the common vernacular mantra practices, wazifa in Sufi terms, is reciting the 99 beautiful names of God. It's like invoking compassion and mercy and strength and courage and so on, but with a sound formula. What do I mean by a sound formula? One that the sound itself is like a tuning fork that tunes the spirit and your being to the vibration of that which you're calling. And when I was a young student of my teacher's, 1969-70, we received a one-page list of the 99 names with one word, one word explanation. And then I practiced that for 20, 30 years and got every text I could on it. All of the texts were all little summary texts, a few lines about the name. And so one morning I was meditating in my practice room, I think around 2001, feeling kind of complaining, saying, why don't we have a proper, like, physician's desk reference on these 99 names, a real complete, thorough book? And my inner guidance, or the voice from within, said to me, you're so right. Would you please help us out? And so in a very innocent, or with innocence, I said, okay, I will. And I realized I couldn't write the book that I wished for by myself. I would need a few, some scholars and some other mystics to join me. And so I'd started with a beautiful master named Faisal Muqaddam. He and I got together. I asked him if he'd work on the project with me, and he said yes. He was a transpersonal psychologist, a native Arabic speaker, and one of the founders of the Diamond School. And after one or two sessions, I was teaching with another scholar named Imam Bilal Hyde. We were teaching in New Orleans at a music festival. And he was asking me what we were doing, and I told him about the project. He said, I'd love to work on that project. And so he joined us. And so for 5 years, the three of us worked together. Once a month, we would meet on a certain set of names. We'd meet for several hours. I would record that would get transcribed. After 5 years, we had nearly 1,000 pages of transcriptions, which were the basis of the book. And at the same time, I was sharing my office where I am now with a colleague of mine who was one of the senior teachers in our Ruhaniyat family, Wali Ali Meyer, one of our murshids. And he was Murshid Sam's, my teacher's esoteric secretary, and a deep mystic in his own way and an excellent writer. He actually won awards as the editor of his college newspaper. Even as a young man, he was an excellent writer. And I asked him if he would help edit the book, take these 1,000 pages and turn it into the text that it is now. And he joined our team, and then, so now we were four, and that took another 5 years. We had help of some other wonderful people, Tawaba Block and Halim Dunsky, you know, people did different parts of it, but it took 10 years to create the book.
Well, I found it invaluable because there's no way I would know the meanings of the words and what names went together. So one of the things on my website is an explanation of the sound code, and I got that from your book. It's very interesting with the Arabic language, the meaning of the words is in the sound. A name like Rahman has a slightly different manifestation as a word like Rahim. I wonder if you could talk about the sound code.
Yeah, so for us as Westerners, we're not familiar with how the structure of Arabic, Hebrew, Aramaic is created. But there's usually three consonants that are connected in some way through vowels. And there are different verb forms. So you gave the example of Rahman and Rahim. So there are several different ways that we investigated the name. So before I speak about the sound code, in an Arabic dictionary, every name has at least 10 different forms, and they help to inform you of the meaning of the word. So Ya Rahman and Ya Rahim are names 1 and 2 in the list, often translated as compassion and mercy. So one of the roots that they both share is Rahma, which means divine love. Then they share another root, Raham, which means womb. Okay, so then now you've got this, the verb sound code form. When a verb has Rahman, it right away calls that it's the activity of that verb is all pervading. When you have Rahim, that all-pervading blessing reaches and touches every single place. So out of this, you can take the meaning, Ya Rahman, a boundaryless container of love, that the universe manifests as a boundaryless container of love, And then Rahim, that boundaryless love touches each and every place. Because when you have boundaryless, you can easily lose the intimacy. So between the two of them, one sends you all the way out and the other sends you all the way to the most intimate feeling of that love.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. That is the name I chose for Chesed, which is loving kindness. It's one of the 10 Sfirot. With your permission, Shabda, I'd like to play a recording of the 99 beautiful names sung together in Moroccan fashion by Sidi Ali Sabai. So Sidi Ali is a friend and colleague of yours who has been reciting Quran at mosque since he was 10 years old, and he's internationally known.
Yeah.
So here he is singing the 99 beautiful names.
والله الذي لا إله إلا هو الرحمن الرحيم الملك القدوس السلام المؤمن المهيمن العزيز الجبار المتكبر الخالق البارئ المصور الغفار القهار الوهاب الرزاق الفتاح العليم يا القابض البارئ الخافض الرافع المعز المذل السميع البصير الحكم العدل اللطيف الخبير الحليم العظيم الغفور الشكور العلي الكبير الحفيظ المقيت الحسيب الجليل الكريم الرقيب المجيب الواسع الحكيم الودود المجيد الباعث الشهيد الحق الوكيل القوي المتين الولي الحميد المحصي المبدئ المعيد المحيي المميت الحي القيوم يا الله الواجد الماجد الواحد الأحد الصمد القادر المقتدر المقدم المؤخر الأول الآخر الظاهر الباطن الوالي المتعالي البر التواب المنتقم العفو الرؤوف مالك ذو الجلال والإكرام المقسط الجامع الغني المغني البارع الضار النافع النور الهادي البديع الباقي الوارث الرشيد الصبور المحيط يا الله
You know, oh, that's truly stirring. I could listen to that again and again. Another thing we have in common is the classical Indian raga singer and teacher, Pandit Pranath. And as a young man, you met Pranath, and I know that he influenced your teaching and spiritual development greatly, as he did me. And I was wondering if you could say something about our Guruji.
I can with pleasure. So we also share that we're both in the Sufi lineage tracing from the great master Hazrat Inayat Khan. And I believe we were both influenced by the fact that Hazrat Inayat Khan, as his devotion, was an Indian classical musician, a renowned classical musician, even as a young man. And when he wrote about music in his book of The Mysticism of Sound and Music, he spoke about music in the highest terms. Music is one of the greatest and the easiest paths to awakening. He said that, why is it that music is so appealing to humanity? He says, really, the soul is made out of music. So, having been touched by that, I was in search of a teacher of Indian classical music. I thought I would find a teacher who was a Rudraveena master, because in his text, and I wrote that the Rudraveena, which was one of the instruments invented by Lord Shiva, was dying. The lineage was dying. And I thought, okay, I'm going to learn that. I didn't want it to die. But as it turns out, I met a a vocalist, Pandit Prannath, who you spoke of, who we call Guruji. And it was a kind of an instant connection when I heard him and met him in both directions. And so I started taking lessons right away. And within a few months, he said, we need to have a little ceremony. And I said, well, I'm already a disciple of a Sufi merchant. And he said, oh, that's okay, and no problem for me. And so I became his disciple. First, I met him in 1972, and then I think it was March 16th, 1973, I became his disciple. And he lived until 1996, so I had 24 years of guidance from him. It's an oral transmission, and certainly it's a transmission of music, but it's a transmission of the spirituality of music as well, how to see life as a composition, how to see life as music, how to harmonize life as a musical composition, how to hear the notes of the scale in everything that's arising. And then as a way of practicing daily, to constantly swim inside the notes, and what a way to go.
Right. For me, studying with Guruji made me much more sensitive to people's voice. Guruji used to say, in between the notes. And for me, this became in between the words. I became more able to hear what someone was saying behind the words being said. I was more able to tune into the vibration beneath the surface appearance, and other sensitivities opened up as well. So for now, let's give our listeners a taste of classical Indian raga. You were in Mother India and recorded the afternoon ragas with a few master musicians. And there were several women on your pilgrimage that joined you at the studio. So during the break, you asked them if they were willing to improvise with you on the zikr, with the woman singing a four-part zikr you wrote in the Madhuvanti scale. So this is the result.
Thank you.
beautiful, transformative. It's melting my boundaries. Shabda, can you speak about how the Sufi path shows us how to connect with something greater than ourselves, even to the point at times of merging or forgetting the individual perspective?
Yeah. Well, the goal isn't at times. The goal is to recognize your true nature, which is a oneness, which is the ocean. And, you know, I think the general human experience is that we feel ourselves a drop in the ocean. But if we were able to touch our essential nature, that which is looking through our eyes and breathing through our mouth and hearing through our ears, we'd see that we're the ocean in a drop. And so humanity, a human being, it's like the ocean, whose nature, call it ocean, call it God, call it the however you'd like to call it, manifests. And if you take the metaphor of a mirror, and don't get too caught on metaphors, but of a mirror, the soul is like a mirror, the ocean of being, and an image comes into the mirror, the image of mind and body, and that ocean, whose nature is love, gets intoxicated, and now narrows its scope to feeling, oh, I'm this mind and body, and now our feelings in that condition of confusion. It's based on what's happening to mind and body, but really speaking, the essence, primordial essence, is limitlessly free. Its experience, its freedom, isn't dependent on any condition. And so gradually, as a mystic, you learn to be present with whatever's arising without an agenda, to make friends with what's arising, to not lose your rhythm through life's conditions, and to be in tune with the infinite. And so this is the path of the Sufi, to deconstruct the notion of a separate self and experience the joy, the glory, the beauty of limitless freedom, of spiritual liberty.
Can you suggest to our listeners how they can take a step in that direction, either through breath or sound?
Yeah. Well, you know, if we think about the purpose of life, and then we recognize that every day we've woken up, so to say, and something is calling us, some sense of fulfillment or happiness, whichever place word holder, you know, placeholder word you want to put there. Like, you could easily say the purpose of life is the wish to fulfill the wish to be happy. All beings wish to be happy. It's universal. And you can, that's written, that roadmap is written on the cell of every living thing. We wake up with it every day, no matter how much we've satisfied that, whether, and how much ice cream you've eaten, how much chocolate you've eaten, how much good sex you have, or whatever, how much good, you know, experiences of joy you have, there's still something calling you on the way. And that happiness won't bloom until we allow that innate, primordial freedom to be our true, to recognize as our true nature. And so so often we think of the purpose of life of having a good job, or, you know, becoming a doctor, that'd be a really good purpose of life. You know, being a sweeper, that wouldn't be so high. But instead of thinking what I'm going to be, if people thought about how I'm going to live. And so if we put together, you know, 10, 11 aspirations that we look to every day. So I would say every day I'm going to make an aspiration for strength and for courage, for kindness, for compassion, for tolerance, for patience, for forgiveness, for gratitude, for integrity, and to be in tune with the infinite. So if you, the listener, can write those down, strength, courage, kindness, compassion, tolerance, patience, forgiveness, gratitude, integrity, and to be in tune with the infinite, and you practice those to the best of your ability, the quality of your life will improve and the quality of the service you can give will improve. So as far as practices, I think it's good to find someone who has experience who can share how that experience has been supported. So naturally, the mysticism of breath is right central for all mystics in every tradition to enter the swing of the breath. And in every sacred language, the word for breath and the word for soul, it's the same word.
For instance, in Hebrew, ruach means both breath and sound. And I do want to apologize for all the banging noise on this recording. There's construction going on right outside my window, and I didn't have any control over that. So please continue with your guidance to our listeners. What can they do to have a happy life?
Yeah. Find a way through gratitude for making a habit of being happy. Make a habit of being happy. And then the other thing is, what does it mean to be able to keep in rhythm with everyday life, with, you know, one's experience? It means, how do I relax through whatever is arising? Because clearly when I'm relaxed, I have the most strength. If I become disturbed by the world and become angry and enraged and jealous and so on, I lose my strength and my peace. So I like to practice this mantra. When things arise, I face what's happening, and I recite the mantra, this is how it is right now. This is how it is right now. This is how it is right now. Make friends with life and deal with what's arising. Don't try to avoid it. But recognize that relaxation, perfect relaxation, is another word for enlightenment.
I think there was a teacher who said, the only sin is tension. Wasn't that Merchant Samuel Lewis?
Samuel Lewis has a poem which says, there's a sign at the gate of heaven, abandon tension, all ye who enter here.
Shabda, I just want to say I have learned so much from being in your Zikr circle and from your retreats over the years. I wanted to thank you deeply from my heart. It's really made a difference in my life. Do you feel that your work is impacting the world in subtle ways in these difficult times?
I'll let history answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
It's not for me to say. I'll keep doing my best.
Thank you,
history be the answer. Okay, sending lots of love and God bless to all of you. And may you have a happy life and a fulfilling life, and may all your actions be of great benefit. Yafata.
Thank you, Shabda. For more mind heart awakenings like these, you can follow us on this podcast and on our blog at Kabbalah 99. That's where we discuss the weekly Torah portion through the lens of today's challenges and offer practices to stay sane, grounded, and connected. If you like this episode, please remember to tell one friend about it. Next week, we'll hear from another thought leader who will help us to explore our experience of life and our place in this universe of wonder. Thanks for listening. I'm Deborah Sophia. See you next week.